This episode of Ticket Volume is brought to you by us, Invigate. Get service operations under control in no time. Get one free month of our software solution by going to try.invigate.com. Ticket Volume is proud to present an independent ITSM coach and consultant for Blackfriar Consulting. He served as the service management lead and ITSM consultant at Shaw Communications, as an IT process and procurement analyst for Calfrac Well Services, and similar roles at places like Burnco Rock Products, Interpipeline, and Agrium. Welcome to Ticket Volume, news and information for improving IT experiences. I am your host, Matt Barron, and each week I get to geek out with nerds around the industry to share insights on service management, technology, and business. And this episode is going to be that. Big surprise. I hope you're having a great day and a great week. I also hope that you'll share our podcast. Get involved. I really want to improve this podcast, so we are going to be making some changes next year, and maybe now's your time to get involved. So get in touch. For now, though, let's begin. Welcome to Ticket Volume, Ryan Ogilvy.
Great. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Oh, my pleasure,
Ryan. Looking forward to our discussion today. The podcast has been really, really good.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Not many guests say that on the air. So now you've captured it for posterity. No one can take it from me now.
Yes, sir.
So I did, you know, I noticed I was writing your intro, and I think I kind of connected the dots on some of the experiences you've had. It kind of seems like you've been in large industrial corporations, like, you know, the Rock Products, Agrium. Is that kind of your niche?
Yeah. So what it really kind of comes down to, I guess, is I'm kind of fortunate where I'm located geographically, that there's lots of different offices for lots of different industries. So like we have foods like Agrium and now it's Nutrien, telecom companies, oil and gas companies, energy companies, things like that. So I've been really fortunate to be located in a great spot geographically.
Okay.
But it always comes back to the same things that they're looking for is kind of the fundamental process components. And that's generally how I get my work. It's through word of mouth and things like that. They're like, well, we thought we were further ahead and we weren't really as far ahead. Maybe we should give this guy a call and see if he can come help you sort some things out. So been really lucky that way.
Okay, cool. That's good to hear. You know, you've been an independent consultant for over 10 years. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
And so you've got,
yeah, it's been a pretty good journey.
Yes. I think there are independent consultants right now that are thinking, oh my gosh, I hope I make it 10 years. I hope that I can maintain enough revenue over 10 years to stick to it. So good for you. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I think the fundamentals are what's really interesting to me. And I've been saying it in some of my presentations recently that we need to focus. We need to work on discipline. We need to remember the basics of why we're here and what we're doing in service management. And I really feel like process mapping is one of them, documenting processes. When you go into a client, do you expect them to have their processes documented? Like what sort of state do you usually come into that picture?
Yeah. So usually what ends up happening is in our initial conversation, like, you know, what's working well, what do you think's not working so well? And they'll usually say, and this is kind of how I will gauge what this is going to look like. Oh, this practice is really, really good. And this practice is great. But we can't adopt AI. We don't know why. And I'm like, okay, how great is great? Who says it's great? And how do we quantify what great is? And then generally when we get there, I'll say, demonstrate kind of how this process works. Well, you know, we don't really have anything for that. We bought a tool to do that. And more often than not, like, I know we've talked about this before, is that, you know, you go to buy a store to buy a hammer. Two different people are going to use that hammer entirely differently. The hammer isn't going to do anything on its own, unless it's magic. And the tool set's going to be the same way. It'll do exactly how you configure it. But if you're not, you know, got those building blocks in place, it becomes very difficult to configure it the way that you want it to achieve the results you're looking for.
Okay. I like this. Yeah. I think we delude ourselves into thinking that that software will solve our problems for us. That if we trust it and put it into place, that it will do the right thing. And I'm sure that a software company, like myself included, like I would love to just say like, yeah, great, put in our software and how it works out of the box should serve your needs. But in reality, there's always that contextual element. There's always the org structure, the data changes, the way we work that needs to be coded into it to actually deliver value.
Yeah, that culture does play a big part for sure. And, you know, one of the things that you know, I will find is I had one client that had said, you know, our change management process, it is on point. For sure, it's the best. We're like so good at it. But for some reason, our incidents are the worst. Now, we can't keep incident managers because they're so overworked. And like, is there a way we can connect the dots here a little bit? Because I'm thinking if things are breaking all the time, like, why are they breaking? Like, we don't even know why they're breaking. They just break because we're so busy fixing things, we don't even realize what's happening. So a lot of the times, depending on that kind of culture, they really haven't put the focus where they maybe they need to, like in a problem management state, things like that. But it's just because they're just struggling to keep above water.
Yes. Everything's on fire, so it's really hard for us to take a breath of fresh air and look around, go to an event, go talk to people, maybe meet up as industry colleagues and peers, you know, amongst our competitors, and then see where we fit. Do you get a lot of questions about maturity models? Do people really do they still focus on CMMI or any of the maturity models that are out there?
I would say depending on who you ask. So a lot of leadership types might refer to maturity models in that way. They'll say, you know, we're kind of like a three or like a four. I'm always hesitant to like understand like what that is, mm-hmm. As far as like how it really applies. Mm-hmm. So someone had come in at some point and said, you know, didn't they, you know, some sort of workshop with them and said, you are a maturity model three. That could have been a decade ago for all we know, really. I don't discount maturity models, but like what I'm looking for is, you know, what are you getting out of what you're doing? Like what value are you, you know, realizing here from the effort that you're putting in? And that's really kind of the key of making sure that your kind of fundamental processes are working the way that they're meant to. And also making sure that people, you know, the people component is thought of so that they're not just, you know, worked to death.
Yeah. Yes. So I wonder if that's why we see in ITIL 4 that this, like, I want to say it's a focus on value. Like, is the thinking that the maturity models are going to go away because, you know, maybe what works at one place doesn't necessarily work at another?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they'll ever really go away.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, what we're kind of, everything has, I guess, has its place. And when used appropriately, it can help you achieve what you're looking to do. One organization, they gave me their maturity model. They said, this is what we did just recently with an, you know, external contractor. They came and did a maturity model assessment with us. How can you take this and make us better? Mm-hmm. And in some cases, because it was a very generic maturity model, some of the things were like, you marked as like not applicable. I'm like, well, it probably wasn't, you know, the best assessment possible. Just because, you know, there's something that doesn't apply, you know, what could have applied or where could it maybe apply better. So I think it's important to make sure that, you know, when you're working, like when I work with a client, I make sure to ask a lot of questions. Sometimes they have in their own answers actually start to figure out their own problems. And that's, for me, that's even better, because me figuring out something for them, and then once I've gone, like, well, we don't really understand why we're doing it this way. And that's quite often when I come to a client, they're like, we just do it because this is the way we've been doing it. We don't really understand why.
Wow. Yes. Okay. This makes a lot of sense. I mean, talking to Marcus, the product manager at PeopleCert, like that, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's kind of where where ITIL is thinking, or where PeopleCert is thinking ITIL is going to go. If this is an interesting conversation to you, I highly recommend you pick up this IT Value Stream book. Some of our former guests took some time to write this great book. I'm just starting it this week, so I'll have a review out on LinkedIn soon. And speaking of ITIL, we should talk about it a little bit. Do you, because you've done ITIL training in your past, right?
Yeah, up until last year, I was providing ITIL training, which was a nice, it was a nice segue, because a lot of cases I would do, I'd work with implementation teams on a tool set, and then we do like some, you know, training as well. So it was kind of a nice way to go. You know, recently they've changed a few things around in the way that the scheme works for trainers and accredited training organizations and things like that. So I wasn't able to continue doing that. And I've moved on to some other products. But the important thing to know with training of any kind really is, you know, what are you getting out of the training? Or is it just a checkbox for something on a resume? So I don't know that I've actually ever been asked to produce an ITIL certification somewhere. They say, you know, they say, you know, must haves, you know, ITIL 4, or my favorite is ITIL V4. They didn't even put the right one there. Stuff like that. And then they never ask about it. Because generally, when you're interviewing or talking about these kinds of things, you can just kind of talk yourself into it, into the work. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why they don't ask for the certification, but no one ever really asks for it. And when I usually would do a course, they would, you know, would ask, you know, what are you looking to kind of get out of it? And there's, you know, the odd student that would say, you know, we want, I'm just looking to kind of get the old checkbox on the old resume. But I think ultimately, if you're using that to do something with your organization, you want to make sure that you're able to apply what you've learned.
Bingo.
To what you're doing.
Yeah. We've had several trainers on. They've kind of all said the same thing. Please don't be here just because my boss told me I had to. Like, let's hope that you've got some, you're looking for inspiration. You're looking for something. How can I apply what I'm learning today? Because that's really where the training sticks. And I have people reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm lucky enough to have a broad network of people that want to reach out and learn more. And I had someone ask me recently, where do you read more about major incident management? Where do you read deeper into problem management? And, you know, quite honestly, I was pretty stuck. There's not a ton of really deep writing on major incident management, especially in the IT space. You see it more in like the healthcare space, or like emergency response teams or EMTs. And I think that I'm glad that you brought up the ITIL schema change, because I think it's important to just be open about it, right? Like, it costs a lot of money now. The profit is not exactly the same as it used to be. Of course, there's going to be other competing products out there. So when you think about major incident management, what sort of guidance do you usually see in that? Because my experience is really just relating incidents to a major incident. You're amping up the communications. Is there anything beyond that I'm missing?
No, I think that's a thing you kind of mentioned before, is like, where do you find this information? Your resources online, so your social communities, things like that, are probably your best place to go to just ask those questions. I find sometimes things like change and incident, those words are used, you know, for various other things. So sometimes you're looking for incident management, you might find something to do with like injuries. Mm. I know in the oil and gas industry, incident is something like they have a formula for that. If someone gets injured at the workplace, they call it an incident, and it can't be confused. So, and change could be that the pro sci, you know, the organizational change management type thing. So yeah, sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to find, but your online resources, things like on your social media accounts, things like that, are great places to ask kind of those questions, to just to kind of fish a little bit and ask, you know, hey, like, this is the challenge we're facing. What have you experienced, and what kind of works, what doesn't work? And I think, you know, for the most part, people are pretty happy to share any, you know, gotchas and things like that, as far as like, we tried this, this didn't work because of X, Y, Z, or, you know, we tried this and it worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we are, I mean, we're basically an entire industry of splainers. We want to be heard. We want to share what we know or be respected for what we know. And so if you haven't found a community like that, definitely check out the Service and Value Management LinkedIn group. It's one that David Bilou, a former guest, has been really managing for quite a long time. And there's over 750 members in there. Luigi Ferri is another person who's an admin on there. So great place to go to ask questions. We also have some other communities. Of course, HDI is another one that you've probably heard on my podcast. So check that one out as well. And there's more popping up every day. So paying attention is kind of where it's at. So let's move on to the next topic. And actually, I don't actually want to move on to the next topic. I want to go back to the first one because I'm curious to know what you find when you go into organizations. Like, you know, it's easy for me to say, okay, you should have your processes mapped. When you leave a client, like let's say that you do an ITSM engagement, you're doing an implementation, you're discovering processes. How do you usually find yourself documenting the processes and like sharing that with the team? Is it manual and training, or do you have some hacks that we should all learn from?
Yeah, I try to keep the training as, you know, user purposeful as possible. So I'll have like, I mean, no one wants to read a change management process guide. They don't. You create one because you need that artifact. You know, your audit and compliance department will want to see it. They'll want to know that it's there, so you have it. But you know, your 20 or less pages, I try to keep it as, you know, as slim as possible, because I've gone places where they're like, well, no one's reading this document. I'm like, oh, let's take a look. It's like 50 or 60 pages. I'm like, I don't even want to read this. I'm getting paid to read this. Like, this is crazy. So, you know, having something simple like that, but also having kind of quick reference guides, videos, things like that, so that people can kind of refresh and it still makes sense after you've kind of left. I think making sure that you know, that knowledge is there. And I think, you know, that is one of the areas that I find for the most part in many organizations I've worked with is like lacking is the knowledge management piece. There, you know, we have to have a change process guide. So that's all we've got. We're not really interested in anything else. But we don't understand why, you know, we can't, you know, get AI to work. It's like, well, you don't have any information for it to learn. If you don't have that information, it's just not going to learn anything. It's just like a person in that sense. So you want to make sure that you have as much varied information as possible and in the right places that people can actually find it.
Yeah, you've nailed it, my man. It's not, we used to have this phrase, RTFM, read the manual. I just bleeped myself there. I loved the comeback to that. It is write the manual. You need to write the manual so we can read the manual. And you know, we recently added a feature to our software that you can take a closed ticket and say, it's an open AI integration, just say create a knowledge article based on this ticket. And people are eating it up because we don't want to author a knowledge article. It's difficult to start from nothing and start building that, especially if you're not trained. You know, I was an English major, so I'm trained to write. I wish I were better at it. But, you know, in IT, not many people get into tech because they want to write or make documentation. But the reality is, there is so much value to be had there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I always use the phrase warn, write once, read never. Have you heard that one? Yeah, same kind of principle. You'll write these documents and no one's ever going to read them. That's because they don't want to read them. I mean, they're like the, well, again, it's just this gross document that I need to read. When I was starting out on a service desk, actually, I was doing an incident management role, and the people that I worked with are like, "Man, you know a lot about technology. Like, you knew all the fixes. You knew how to get all the answers. Like, you just you would call someone up and say, hey, the telecom person, you do an IS reset on XYZ. They're like, wow, does he know all this stuff? And I'm like, it's because it was documented. It broke like three times before. I just looked at the last couple times it broke. This is what we fixed it with. And so instead of them trying to reinvent the wheel, I would just be like, hey, I could maybe take a look at this, you know, maybe look at the server, maybe do, you know, have to bounce the box, whatever. I'm like, wow, how did you know that? It's not because I was smart. It's just because I was, you know, reading what had happened the last, you know, 3,000 times. And, you know, that's, and I think that's what kind of people forget is with the knowledge articles is that there's, they're pouring a lot of time into writing things that maybe they're like, maybe they're not, like you say, they're not authors in that sense. But if they were just taking the information and putting it in context that makes sense for what they're going to use it for, i.e. like, hey, how did I fix this last time? Then it's just going to serve its purpose.
Yeah. And there's tons of tools that are coming that, and out that, that really make this easy. One that I've loved for a long time is called Screen Steps. Makes it super easy to just go through a process. Every time you click your button, your mouse button, it takes a screenshot. And then later you can go in and add the notes, do this, crop the screenshot. Very easy to author content in that way. Loom is another one that was, that's been huge. Just a quick way to shoot a video and show someone how to do something. And yeah, I really like what you point out specifically that just look through your ticket data. The ticket data can totally be a knowledge base and a knowledge repository for you. So look there. And there's this element of you kind of are just, I don't want to say omnipresent, but you're really present. You're paying attention to what's going on in an environment. You're maybe seeing everything that's happening. You're maybe seeing every incident, especially if you're a small service desk or a small company. You're seeing literally everything that breaks. And eventually that becomes tribal knowledge, something that you just know. Hey, if we kick the server right here, it tends to be fine the next morning or something like that, right? Like the unknown knowns.
Yeah, you put the piece of foil on top of the modem a certain way and it works.
yeah, what we used to do for TV antennas. Oh my gosh.
That's right.
We've come a long way with technology, haven't we?
Oh, totally. Yeah,
and totally. So I would love to get your perspective on that because, you know, we've been through this. We've seen DevOps and cloud and agile ways of working completely revolutionize the way that we deliver IT operations. And I'm wondering, what do you think, has that changed support and service? Has that changed like the rest of the stuff that we do? Or has it all just been a distraction?
I think it would depend on who you ask. Mm. So many of those things are almost invisible to anyone because there's some certain levels of automation, I guess, involved in doing that. The tasks that we, you know, streamlined, really, we kind of forget that they were there. You know, it's kind of like, you know, something that you like, you know, when you buy a cassette, you know, if you remember them and you didn't have a battery, so you would wind it, you know, whatever, you do all these different things to get it to work the way it worked. But once they're kind of worked themselves out of the picture, you don't really remember them any longer. And where the user experience becomes important is that's always kind of front of mind. So when you're, you know, whatever the interface is that's kind of left with the, for your user experience, that is something that's quantifiable as far as, you know, working with your business. They'll say, you know, I had to talk to somebody at the service desk because they needed to do something personal for us. And they were fantastic. And they did this and they did that. And all those things were really, really good. In other cases, it's some kind of interface that they're doing with a service portal. So those things, the user experience piece, I think is important to kind of be mindful of. And just like how that's perceived, I guess, when we're talking about, do those things really make a difference? In some cases, the business may be entirely unaware that they're even there. Those improvements even happened.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of our improvement has been for our own good. And it served us and it served the business too, right? Of course, there's someone benefits. But yeah, it's totally invisible. I don't think about that very often because I'm so in the weeds, you know, it's what we do. So it feels a lot different.
Yeah, and you totally notice if you have to deal with somebody where it's like the user experience is not good. You know, if you're like, I can't figure out how to get a hold of somebody. What do I got to do? Like I've had experiences like that where I'm like, there's no chat. There doesn't seem to be a phone number. There doesn't seem to be an email. There's no Twitter account. Like how do I connect to these people? And then when you do find it, it's usually painful.
Yeah.
And you can just tell when you're talking to the person at the other end, they understand it's painful, but this doesn't seem to, you know, make any improvement. So.
Yeah. Inaccessible by design.
Yeah.
Terrible. It's a terrible way to run things. Don't do that. If you're listening to this podcast, please do not do that. Okay. Ryan, where can people connect with you and learn more?
Best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. You can reach me there. Feel free to contact me anytime with any questions you have or things like that. No questions too small, and all contact is great, especially now. So, I look forward to hearing from people, and if you have any questions, reach out. And like you mentioned before, there's some really great groups. The Give Blues group that you mentioned earlier, that's a great group to be part of. There's a lot of good information in there. And here on the podcast as well.
Thanks for putting in a plug for the podcast, and thanks for your time. Thanks for contributing to Ticket Volume, Ryan.
Thank you very much.
And for the rest of our audience, did you know that you can join us for a live recording? We've got them coming up in November, December, and we'll probably just keep them running because they've been wildly popular. Register today at ticketvolume.com and click on register. And thank you for listening. You can change or improve this podcast by DMing me or leaving a comment. And speaking of Ticket Volume, did you know that this podcast is brought to you by Invigate? It's a fit-for-purpose service desk solution with integrated asset management designed to let you focus on supporting your organization without platform teams taking months to implement changes that you need on your service desk. In fact, IT teams from Toyota, NASA, and McDonald's choose Invigate to manage their requests, automate workflows, and centralize inventory data so that they can focus on delivering better service. Because good service is good business.